The infant turned away from the bars and walked off. From time to time, the big mother nudged her baby, guiding it away as they both walked out into the fields.
"Goodbye, Ralph,"
Lex said, waving. Tim came out of the shadows of the building.
"Tell you what," Grant said, "I'm going up on the hill to set off the motion sensors so they'll know to come get us. You two stay here and wait for me."
"No,"
Lex said.
"Why? Stay here. It's safe here."
"You're not leaving us," she said. "Right, Timmy?"
"Right," Tim said. "Okay," Grant said. They crawled through the bars, stepping outside. It was just before dawn. The air was warm and humid, the sky soft pink and purple. A white mist clung low to the ground. Some distance away, they saw the mother Triceratops and the baby moving away toward a herd of large duck-billed hadrosaurs eating foliage from trees at the edge of the lagoon. Some of the hadrosaurs stood knee-deep in the water. They drank, lowering their flat heads, meeting their own reflections in the still water. Then they looked up again, their heads swiveling. At the water's edge, one of the babies ventured out, squeaked, and scrambled back while the adults watched indulgently. Farther south, other hadrosaurs were eating the lower vegetation. Sometimes they reared up on their hind legs, resting their forelegs on the tree trunks so they could reach the leaves on higher branches. And in the far distance, a giant apatosaur stood above the trees, the tiny head swiveling on the long neck. The scene was so peaceful, Grant found it hard to imagine any danger.
"Yow!"
Lex shouted, ducking. Two giant red dragonflies with 6-foot wingspans hummed past them.
"What was that?"
"Dragonflies," he said. "The Jurassic was a time of huge insects."
"Do they bite?"
Lex said.
"I don't think so," Grant said.
Tim held out his hand. One of the dragonflies lighted on it. He could feel the weight of the huge insect.
"He's gonna bite you,"
Lex warned. But the dragonfly just slowly flapped its red-veined, transparent wings, and then, when Tim moved his arm, flew off again.
"Which way do we go?"
Lex said. "There." They started walking across the field. They reached a black box mounted on a heavy metal tripod, the first of the motion sensors. Grant stopped and waved his hand in front of it back and forth, but nothing happened. If the phones didn't work, perhaps the sensors didn't work either. "We'll try another one," he said, pointing across the field. Somewhere in the distance, they heard the roar of a large animal.
"Ah, hell," Arnold said. "I just can't find it."
He sipped coffee and stared, bleary-eyed, at the screens. He had taken all the video monitors offline. In the control room, he was searching the computer code. He was exhausted. He'd been working for 12 straight hours. He turned to Wu, who would come up from the lab.
"Find what?" "The phones are still out. I can't get them back on. I think Nedry did something to the phones."
Wu lifted one phone, heard hissing.
"Sounds like a modem."
"But it's not," Arnold said, "because I went down into the basement and shut off all the modems. What you're hearing is just white noise that sounds like a modem transmitting."
"So the phone lines are jammed?"
"Basically, yes. Nedry jammed them very well. He's inserted some kind of a lockout into the program code, and now I can't find it, because I gave that restore command which erased part of the program listings. But apparently the command to shut off the phones is still resident in the computer memory."
Wu shrugged. "So, just reset, shut the system down, and you'll clear memory."
"I've never done it before," Arnold said, "and I'm reluctant to do it. Maybe all the systems will come back on..."